Cowardice. Are you serious? Apologies for freedom. I can't handle this. When freedom rings, answer the call. On your feet, stand up tall. Freedom's on our shoulders. USA! Enemies of freedom. Face the music. Come on, boys, take them down.
You're listening pretty late, and I love that my sidecar, Brendan C. Price, is picking apart the lyrics as not
it's
rhyming.
It's not well written. Not well written.
And I think to describe it is also appropriate that way. Just, I don't even want to use words to describe it. We have Rich Lenkoff on the line, who is now we're getting to the just preferred half of Legal Face Off. Is that where we are now, Rich?
The only half, the only one that matter. I mean, at this point, we even wonder if Whiteside is a real person or not. But
I see this picture, and I mean, the whole thing looks rather. You can go to WGNplus.com and look for Legal Face Off, and I think this is photoshopped. I think that you put somebody. Although he's a tall dude, is he standing on a box in order to be in this picture with you?
You know, he spends a lot of money on photoshopping that photo. His hand. His fist looks a lot bigger than mine. You know, he's got to make up for his lack of legal skills somehow. So,
well, whatever it takes. But we appreciate your legal skills when you come on our show. And we had a lot of topics. And I realized even this segment, which we, Rich, I don't know how much you're able to have conversations with people anymore about this election. I have decided that we will only talk about Donald Trump on Wednesdays, and aptly named by our very own Esmeralda Leon. It's called Trump Trackers. We only take the stories from Wednesday to Wednesday. Nothing from before that. No other craziness. And that's from both candidates. On Thursday, we do Hillary's Hurlers. So people can send us links. There's actually enough. We only have two things we can even get to tonight because those are, I think, enough conversation. And because this first one, are you in someone's? Did you just get honked at? What happened?
that was my alarm to remind me to call in. So
be on the air now. So because this is a Constitution conversation that Donald Trump had yesterday, a reference he made. Let's go ahead and listen to that clip. I want to refresh everyone's memory in case you haven't heard what Donald Trump said yesterday. Ooh, do we have just a moment? Stand by, everyone, for Trump 1.
Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
Okay, so
that would be.
Brandon, did you not hear the whole speech in context like that?
No, I mean, out of context, you could hear that would be a horrible day, and I wonder if he means when Hillary is elected or when friends shot her. Like,
oh wait, there's a response from him on Sean Hannity. Let's go with this first, and then we'll let Donald Trump respond after our response. What do you hear when that clip is played, Rich Lenkoff, Attorney Rich Lenkoff?
Well, I mean, you know, from a just a non-legal perspective, I think I hear what everyone else in the world hears, which is that he's making a ridiculous statement that, you know, on its face is maybe not dangerous, but you know, certainly stupid. From a legal perspective, you know, I hear speech that is constitutionally protected, you know, maybe unfortunately for a lot of people. But, you know, the test as to whether what he said is considered free speech or if it's considered, you know, a serious expression of, you know, an intent to incite violence, there's a couple of factors that go into it. And it's not really, you know, that hard to understand. Basically, you look at whether he is talking about doing something or inciting someone to do something that's imminent. You know, there has to be, in order for this to be criminal conduct, it has to have some immediacy. Secondly, it has to be, you know, fairly unambiguous. And I don't think what he said meets either of those standards. You know, he's not telling people, I want you to go out and shoot this candidate. And by the way, she doesn't have to be president. The law that's in place here goes back to 1917. it actually protects candidates for president. So it doesn't matter that she's not president, but, you know, he'd have to come out and say, I want you to shoot this candidate, and I want you to do so immediately. I mean, not exactly those words, but pretty close for this to be criminal speech.
So it's not criminal speech. Did you see that the Secret Service has spoken to Donald Trump's campaign? I was asking Brandon off the air because, you know, we all can hear things differently, right? But I don't consider the Secret Service to be a political branch at all. They seem to be apolitical because they have a specific job, a specific duty, and they have met with Donald Trump's campaign. That seems to me to suggest that it's important enough for them we don't know what those conversations were. Donald Trump's campaign has denied that they met with the Secret Service. However, the Secret Service has said they have contacted and met with his campaign. Not in a legal sense, though, but what does that tell you?
Well, the Secret Service it tells me that they're doing their job. I mean, you know, there's a difference between the Secret Service talking to his campaign and this amounting to, you know, criminal conduct or speech that's not protected by the First Amendment. I mean, the Secret Service has a job, and their job is to protect candidates, protect the president. So the fact that they talk to him is not surprising. I mean, remember, they investigate, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of threats against presidents and candidates every year. I mean, there's all sorts of threat levels that are, you know, are made, or all sorts of threats that are made all the time. So yes, they're taking it seriously. That's their job. That doesn't mean that if someone were to accuse him of violating the law that protects presidential candidates, that, you know, the Secret Service discussion would be really, you know, very relevant. So I don't think that's that relevant. Again, the real question is legally whether he meets the standard of insightful speech. And I don't think he does.
Because I just, as a side thought, I was this guy who was trying to climb the outside of Donald Trump's tower in New York. I think, and it sort of lends, like, that's the kind of campaign we're having, is that someone is driven to do something like that just because he wants a meeting with Donald Trump. So what I was telling Brandon, to me, there are the idea of dog whistles. But as you mentioned, dog whistle meaning I'm saying this, and what I'm trying to do is get you on this other behavior.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no question. Listen, I mean, there's no question that, again, from a legal perspective, I don't think, you know, what he said is criminal. But from a practical standpoint, from a common sense standpoint, and, you know, I've seen, you know, you have to not just listen to the clip that you play, but you have to see it. There's no question that what he was saying was, yes, the way to stop Hillary is to shoot her. You know, anyone who buys Trump's explanation after the fact is just, I think it's just ridiculous. I mean, the fact that he said afterwards, oh, that would be a terrible day. He's not saying it would be a terrible day if someone did that. He's saying it would be a terrible day if she was president. I mean, there's just no way that you would ever, you know, have heard, you'd have to land on this planet for the first day ever and never had heard Trump before to believe that what he was saying was anything but, yeah, take a gun and shoot her.
Go, Brandon would like to respond to that.
Well, I just heard something on the radio today that was in reference to the fact that people just talk and sometimes things like that come out. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with Trump being just an awful person all the time. But like in 2008, they quoted Hillary when she was remaining in the race after California with Obama. And, you know, they pointed out, like, well, Bill didn't wrap up the nomination until June. And she just said a sentence something like, well, we all remember Bobby Kennedy was assassinated right before they figured out that he'd be winning or whatever. And she had to apologize. And that came out. And it was like, and if it, taken out of context of who we know Trump to be, just in the fact that politicians have to talk in front of everyone 24/7 and are always under the microscope, is there no way that it could have been just one of those things like Hillary had in 08 that she wasn't trying to incite violence? It was just, you just talk all the time and then something comes out off the cusp and it's very easily taken in a way you didn't mean.
Well, I respect that, but here's why I think this is different. This is not, if this was the first time Trump spoke that way, you would maybe say, yeah, this is just, you know, he just misspoke. But, you know, Trump is, if nothing else, he's very conscious of what he says. And listen, I think that this is dog whistle politics over and over again. I think when he, you know, says that Obama wasn't born in this country, I think that's clearly, meant to question whether an African American should be president. I think when he talks about Muslims, I think it's the same thing. I mean, you know, there's a laundry list of 10 or 12 things like this that he said that are calculated, I think, to appeal to the basis sense of, you know, people's fears and insecurity. So, you know, if this was a one-time thing, I think maybe you give him a pass, but, you know, this is like the 15th or so thing that he said like this that, I think is pretty clear what he's trying to do.
I'm glad that Rich Lincoln was saying instead of me. We,
I'm not disagreeing.
No, not for you. No, not for you. I mean, because one of the things that has come up is whether or not the station or shows are, you know, so anti-Trump that it becomes unlistenable. Mm. But the thing is that when he says things like this, how do we not talk about it in this context? And of course, there are going to be people who say, well, you know, that, look, I have conversations in my head and only some of the words come out. Mm. I think many of us, like the part of the that, you know, we want to convey doesn't always match what is heard. And so I can see that. But to Rich's point, you know, when Donald Trump has encouraged people to beat protesters and to, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. you're like, it's hard. To, yeah.
Something interesting. I don't get you guys' take on this. I heard when I was visiting the South last week is that a lot of people just instantly go, well, he's saying that to make liberals angry. He wouldn't do these types of things. He's trying to get our attention to the fact that we should care more and we should get all fired up more.
Interesting.
Ignorant, but interesting.
Well, the things that he says aren't going to change the minds of people who...
I just think in a way he wins every time he says something like that because of that opinion. You know what I mean? Like now we're all talking about him. We haven't mentioned Hillary maybe more than once tonight. Mm-hmm. And so this guy's in everybody's ear. And whether that's not going to change your opinion one way or the other,
right.
but it's going to get you fired up one way or the other. You know what I mean? So you're just going to remain polarized and everyone that is on his side regardless are hearing us talk about it. And if we say something negative, it's like, oh, well, they're trying to get after him and you stop listening to the point and now you're fired up. So what happens is you don't only vote, now you campaign.
Right.
And you know what I mean? And so if Hillary's not firing us up that way, as if you're a Hillary supporter, yeah, you'll vote. But are you know what I mean? You might not campaign because you don't feel so passionately. I think every time he does one of these things, I think Rich is right. He knows what he's saying. I think he's winning in a little way.
I mean, I agree with that. I mean, listen, there's a certain segment of the population that for the first time, I think, in a long time, they're hearing things that they've never heard before at a national level, and it appeals to them. I mean, I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but they're just hearing words and statements and things from a national candidate, someone who might be president, that appeals to them. You know, listen, I come on your show as a legal analyst. I'm generally pretty objective, and I think that a lot of what Trump has said in the past, you know, I've actually agreed with some of it. But, you know, over the last couple of months, it's just hard to listen to what he says and take him seriously. Like when he says that the judge on the Trump University case is biased because he's Mexican, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, number one, the guy's not Mexican. He was born in the United States. And number two, even if he was Mexican, let's even assume the guy was Mexican, so what? I mean, how are you as a presidential candidate going to lead a nation of immigrants and think that someone who is born in Mexico cannot be objective? I mean, to me, that's just, you know, like if that was the only thing he said, like that used to be enough to derail people, right? I mean, remember George Allen, like, 10 years ago, in Virginia, you know, prominent figure was running for the Senate or for governor, and used the term macaca over a protester. The guy's life was over. You never heard from the guy again. I mean, he literally has not been heard of in the 8 or 10 years. The macaca statement at the time was, oh my God, this was the biggest scandal ever. Trump says macaca every single day.
Yes.
And he might be president.
Right. It was Brandon's asking about the comment about Makaka. There was a candidate
very quietly mouthing, "What does that mean?"
Right,
and it pulled off because now no one knows I didn't.
Well,
know.
Now everyone has to Google during the break. We're talking to Rich Langkov. We've got a couple more stories to talk about when we come back, including, of course, the refusal of Blagojevich's judge to lighten his sentence, and whether or not you can ban sexism in the courtroom. I'm curious about that. I know. Can it be done? More after this on 720. WGN with attorney Rich Lenkov, the preferred half of Legal Face Off. There it is. Some music. I just need some dance music. It's not crucial, but it's always nice to have a little dance music. Are you dancing, Rich Lenkov? Is that your?
I am. I gotta get back to my serious position on the couch. But dancing.
My dance alarm went off.
Yes, exactly.
You and Jason Whiteside have dropped your podcast this week a little bit early because of the sentencing, the non-sentence, the court decision yesterday. Is that why?
All of those things. we were supposed to tape tomorrow. That's our regular day, but because of Blago, we went early. So
it's smart.
That's on WGNplus.com on iTunes. Yeah.
Yeah. What were your thoughts when that, because I was watching it in real time. Not, I wasn't watching the decision. I was watching WGN TV news as the decision came down. What happened? Were you there, by the way?
I was, yeah. I was there from the beginning. I was there the whole time.
And what was the atmosphere like when either Rob Blagojevich spoke or his wife spoke as well, pleading with the judge to lighten his sentence? Is that correct?
His wife did not speak. She wrote a letter to the judge that was delivered the day before that the media that we saw. His two daughters, though, who are now 13 and 20, they spoke very powerfully. So, yeah, I mean, the vibe in the room when the governor spoke, he was rambling a little bit. I mean, I think he was, fairly articulate, nothing we haven't really heard before. To be honest, I don't think what he said, and it turns out, what he said didn't really move the judge very much. But, what was really powerful in the courtroom was when his daughter spoke. I mean, we've got, a 13-year-old and a 20-year-old who spoke very eloquently about the effect that this whole ordeal has had on them and their lives. They were tearful. Very sad, obviously. You have to be a machine to not hear that and be moved. But didn't really influence Judge Zagel, as we learned later.
Yeah, no kidding, because there were charges that were dropped. This was the hope. It was because some of the charges were removed that perhaps that would be reflected in the sentencing.
Yeah, the appellate court had dropped five of the counts, and the purpose of yesterday was for Judge Zagel to determine whether the dropping of those counts warranted a reduction of the sentence, because those two things aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily go together. So Judge Zagel, after hearing, some additional testimony from Blagojevich and the daughters, and, the attorneys were talking about how 100 of Blagojevich's fellow inmates wrote letters about being helped and being taught by Blagojevich. All that amounted to Judge Zagel not changing his sentence.
Wow. And do you have an opinion on his opinion?
I do. I mean, I think I wasn't surprised. Anyone who followed the trials and the appeals, there was really nothing new that came out of yesterday or came out of the dropping of the counts that really would force or even allow Judge Zagel. I shouldn't say allow. I mean, obviously he could do what he wants, but there really wasn't any new evidence. I mean, the crux of Leonard Goodman's argument yesterday to Judge Zagel was twofold. Basically that he has rehabilitated himself. He's no longer the man he was. And secondly, that this was the only case in history of an elected official being prosecuted for strictly political acts and not, for taking things for personal gain. So, in light of that, I wasn't very shocked. But to answer your question, my personal opinion has always been that, Blagojevich got way too much time. I mean, I was very shocked at the 14 years when it came down, and I'm surprised that it wasn't reduced. You know, I agree that this wasn't a case that Blagojevich profited personally. You know, we've seen plenty of examples, you know, most recently in Virginia, where the governor of that state was, you know, getting clothing and trips and money for college. I mean, that was all being paid to him, and he was prosecuted ultimately the Supreme Court about 6 months ago, or even I think it was 3 months ago, overturned that sentence. So for Blagojevich to serve 14 years when he never, you know, pocketed any money, he never gained personally. He was, you know, convicted of trying to sell the Senate seat in exchange for campaign funds, but that's different from, you know, getting things for personal gain. I mean, remember Jesse Jackson Jr. got like a year and a half or something, you know, less than 2 years, and he got a watch. He got, you know, Michael Jackson's glove.
Wow.
He got a whole bunch of things that benefited him personally. So, yeah, I think it was too long.
But doesn't getting vote? I mean, like, so he's using it for his campaign funding. Isn't that a personal gain in a different way? So it's not a house, but it's a position that you want, a position of power. And if you're willing to be corrupted enough to get that, to use corruption to get that, wouldn't you therefore probably be inclined to use the corruptive power that you have when you got that? I mean, I don't disagree that it seems like a long sentence, but I'm just, you know, curious to see if that's the point of maybe a judge that is deciding to keep him in that long.
Definitely. I mean, you nailed it, right? I mean, the idea is that someone in the position of power that he's in, I mean, there's only 50 jobs like that in the world, right? There's only 50 governorships. So Judge Zagel, I think, you know, one of the reasons he imposed a 14-year sentence was just as you said. I mean, this is behavior that you shouldn't tolerate. And, you know, even though he didn't actually profit personally, what he intended to do, and if you remember, you know, federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, you know, used the words, you know, they were trying to stop a crime in action. What he wanted to do was sell the Senate seat for a job in the Obama administration. He wanted the Health and Human Services job, and that paid money. Obviously, that carried a salary. It was like $120,000 or something. So. Yeah, I mean, if he, you know, the argument goes, the federal government argument goes that if this wasn't stopped, then he would have successfully traded this, you know, position for a salaried position in the government. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's, you know, part of why Judge Zagel didn't reduce the sentence.
You can hear more of Rich Lankov's important conversation about the Blagojevich sentencing or not, or resentencing or failure of lightening the sentence. I don't know which way to phrase it, but he and Jason, now Jason Whiteside, is that his name?
We think so.
They'll be discussing that and a lot of other things, including in their legal grab bag, amusement parks, Michael Madigan, and the Olympics. So go to WGN Plus for their podcast, Legal Face Off, and we'll talk to you again soon. Get some sleep. I know that set your alarm for much later.
Sounds good.
Get some sleep.